I'm Bill Cundiff. Come, I couldn't hear you.
I don't know. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so it's still We the People Radio, and I'm still Aaron Ryan. However, our website at wethepeopleradio.us is, I don't know, what do we call it?
Out of commission.
It's in suspended animation. It's trapped in last week. It couldn't move on. And I just want you to know it had nothing to do with the idiotic hearing in the House of Representatives. It's totally disconnected. I do think maybe it had something to do with a program on China. And then there was a major hack situation that happened. And then our web server shut everything off.
Are you sure someone's not trying to impeach you?
No, but I've got a bunch of dumb answers for them if they'd like.
Yeah, because that's the thing now. Everybody's got to be impeached.
I guess you'll have to impeach me. Yeah. But you can still get our phone number and our email addresses at wethepeopleradio.us. So that's still on there. The website is actually up. But if you want to see information about our guest and you are listening on the 29th of September, 2019, you're going to have to look at last week. Until I can get that squared away. So we thought, well, in light of the fact that apparently the Chinese liked our show so much, they felt the need to screw up our website. And they actually hacked Bill's email address, which was sort of funny. They made a whole bunch of fake emails. It was Q1 at ibcundiff.com, Q2, Q3, Q4, Q5. I'm like, well, that's not really very clever. So they get demerits for cleverness. But anyway, they made a bunch of fake emails, and I don't know what they were doing with them. But maybe while we're on the air,
maybe they're going to fix it. They're going to send me a prize.
Maybe they could go fix it and update the page for today. Since they're the only ones that can get in, I'm locked out. So we will post the commercial-free archive and all that good stuff just as soon as we can. But if you're looking at it as we're airing live and you're going, what the heck is wrong with these guys? Why are they saying to be announced? It's because we can't get there from here. So our guest is... again, the fabulous Dr. Chen, and he's just got a ton of information. We only had him on for an hour last week, and we were talking about his background and his story of how he wound up coming to this country, and there was just a lot more information that we needed to share. So let's see. I'm gonna skip around here on his bio, because I didn't get to some fun things last time. So he began his activism in 1989, and upon learning about the brutal persecution of the Falun Gong in China, he founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group in 2001 and has since submitted over 100,000 cases of human rights abuses against Falun Gong practitioners to the UN Special Reporters. He's also the president of the Conscience Foundation, a nonprofit organization to publicize and remind people that human conscience is the very essence of humanity, which I'm sure makes him incredibly popular in China. So this is all about popularity today. And he's spoken extensively on the issue of human rights in China. And since 2001, he has frequented meetings of the UN Human Rights Commission in Geneva, now the Human Rights Council, spoken to the council, to special reporters, and many forums following the cases of human rights. And then I wanted to skip down to this other part. Oh, in 2005, Dr. Chen conceived the idea of the Courageous People, Spirited Land TV series, and he implemented the project. The programs have since become very popular in China, where viewers have been disseminating them, defying the Chinese regime's prohibition. So it's kind of all about defying the Chinese, I guess. Apparently that's what we're doing today. We're just defying the Chinese. He was born. How great is that, huh?
Yeah. They can knock our website off, but we're still going to defy.
But we still got last week, see, so we still have your bio on there. And what we talked about last week, we're not going to go through that in its entirety, but I would encourage you to listen because it's really interesting. He was born in China in 1962 and at the age of 15 entered the gifted program at the China University of Science and Technology. And there's a whole lot more to that. Very interesting. Came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. Currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. That'll be the part that no matter how many times we have you on, we'll never get to that. We'll just leave you to that, since that's not something we're good at.
So one thing we didn't talk about last week was the Chinese government paid to have you come over here and go to college, and then you stayed. How did that go over? I mean, probably weren't too happy about
that. That's not my choice. It's actually not my choice.
Oh, okay.
I am not allowed to go back to China, put it simply.
Oh. Persona non grata. You got the persona non grata award, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So, what happened? Well, I'll talk about, you know, how I was. But what happened after 1989, because my activism, I was elected as the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the United States. At that time, that was the largest pro-democracy organization, Chinese pro-democracy organization in the United States. And we have done, as an organization, we have done many things that that threatened the Chinese government. And that earned me a spot in their blacklist. They have a long blacklist or a short one. I'm on the short one. And as time goes by, many of my friends were slowly delisted from, you know, the blacklist. But many times they would come back from China, and not, since they're off on the blacklist, they were able to go back to China. But then, after they came back, they would tell me, "Don't come back yet. You cannot come back yet because even though they were taken off on the blacklist, they were able to go back to China. But they will be visited by this national security whatever agent, and then apparently they still." Would interrogate them about the situation, you know, who's who, you know, what they're doing in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still their target. So that's why they know that I'm still on the blacklist.
So they never contacted you and said, don't come back. You just kind of heard
through
the grapevine that you can't go back.
Well, they won't let you. They won't let you to go back, and they have waived to not let you to go back. So I have friends. I did not have to. Fortunately, I did not have to go through those ordeals. But I have some friends who are need to go back to China because their parents, you know, were you know, very ill, and they want to see their son or daughter, you know, for the last time. And yet the Chinese government wouldn't allow them to go back.
Wow.
And some has landed in China in the airplane, but then they were forced back to the United States. So that's how the government let them know they're not welcome there. They're
right.
Not wanted there.
Right. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to stay on that vein for just a little bit longer. I had a couple other questions for you.
Okay.
Keep going, Bill.
No.
You're doing good.
No, you're all right.
You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
So you heard kind of through the grapevine that you could not go back to China. At that point, you weren't a U.S. citizen, but you couldn't go back to China. So where'd that leave you?
Okay, that's a very interesting question, and it's that has a story within a story. So, Chinese students at that time, like after the Cultural Revolution, most of us were very traditional. I was like that. We were very patriotic. I still really remember, vividly remember, you know, the first month after I came to the United States, I studied in the first school, the first graduate school I attended to was the Cornell Medical School. That's not in Ithaca, but in Manhattan. And there were only two Chinese scholars of the whole visiting scholars. Actually, one. The other one is in Sloan Kettering. Okay. So there were only two Chinese from mainland in the whole in a big campus. And when I came, one of them who came before me a year ahead of me gave me a book. Inawo, which is about, which described the lives of the Taiwan students, but that's in German, you know, how they study abroad in German. And inside it described a story about a student from Israel, a girl from Israel, in that story. She went to study in German, and she carried a Israel flag and posted it at the wall of her bed. And so the Taiwan student in the novel was curious about it, and then I asked her, why is she doing that? And she said, because even though I am studying in German in a safe environment, I cannot forget the fact that my fatherland is under attack every minute. And when I read to that, I literally cried my heart out, because that is exactly how I felt. That was 1981, in October 1981. When I got to that part, you know, it was actually pretty late at night. And we were told that we were educated in China, when we were in China, that the United States is a horrible place, it's hell, that there's so dangerous, it's, you know, it's only for the rich people to have a life, for the poor people, it's a hell. And the public safety is terrible, everything's terrible. And I didn't care. When I just finished that novel, it was middle of the night, it's 2 a.m., and I just had to get myself out of my dormitory. I have to get on the street, no matter how dangerous it was. I was ready to be killed. I was so emotional, because when I came to the United States, I have one thing in my mind. That is, I will learn all the things I can learn from the United States and take them back to serve my country, to serve my people. And that's what I came here for. And so I knew how backward my country was. And so that was why that touched me so deeply. I cried through that novel. And after finish at 2 a.m., I just couldn't care anything. I just have to let my emotion out. I just walk Manhattan at middle of the night at 2 a.m. And it just happened that night. It was a full moon. I look up to the sky, and the moon is bright because the air is cleaner. There's less pollution. Unfortunately, that's true. There's less
pollution. You can actually see the moon?
Yeah, the moon is very bright, and you can see, you know, those, you know, volcano, whatever structure in it. And I, there just happens, there is a Chinese saying. It's similar to that the grass in other people's yard is greener, that kind of saying.
Sure.
But the equivalent saying is the moon in foreign countries are brighter. It's a sarcasm. Sarcasm. I mean, to laugh at those people who, you know, just try to escape their responsible boy for their motherland, right?
And it accidentally turned out to be true?
Yeah. So I look at the sky.
Oh, my gosh.
And found it to be, the moon is brighter, is bigger, appeared to be bigger than in China. And I was, my heart was filled with resentment. I said, God damn it, why your moon is, I mean, United States, why your moon is brighter and bigger? I'm going to make my moon in China bigger and brighter. That was me. I was just full of idealism and patriotism. And that was what got me into trouble in the first place in the 1989 student movement, because that is for my people. And so later there's a, there's some student who wants to do a documentary on Chinese students studying the United States, and they selected this part of my story into their documentary. But so I have done quite well in my academic studies, and my advisor oftentimes asks me, you know, what's your plan? You should continue on your academic study, because, you know, you really think I am a very good researcher. And so he was trying to talk me into applying for, you know, green card to stay in the United States. At the beginning, it was like an insult to me. So I know his intention's good. He doesn't mean any harm, but to me, I want to go back to serve my country. I am not interested in your country. Is good enough. You don't need my help. My country needs my help. And so I always reject it with an attitude. And so after a while, the whole lab knows what kind of person I am. But then 1989 changed that. That got me onto the blacklist. I cannot go back to China. But then the massacre happened. The Congress passed a law after the June 4th massacre and give protection to the student in the United States, because most of them participate in what I mentioned earlier, IFCSS, Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars. A lot of them have participated in that activity. And so the Congress passed a bill. The old Bush vetoed that bill, but because it's so overwhelmingly passed, he vetoed that bill, but replaced it with his own executive order to allow the student at that time to stay in the United States. And so they got protection from the United States. So I was able to extend my stay, and still, I did not want to become U.S. citizen. I still want to go back to China to serve my country. And even now, if I can go back to serve my country, I would go back, you know, with no second thought. but I cannot. But how then later, quite a few years later, about in 2004 or 5, around 2002, and I started to apply to become a naturalized citizen. And that it was one article. Again, I cried after reading it because it talked about a particular kind of swallow, a bird, okay? How the bird was hunted to extinction in China. And when I read that, I felt so ashamed that I'm associated with that kind of country. I thought, okay, we're people. We're Chinese people. We unfortunately have this evil government to rule our lives. And we're unfortunate. And some of the people oppose the government, and face whatever consequences. But the birds, what crime did they commit? Why would they hunt it to extinction? And that was the moment that I felt so ashamed. And I literally was looking for, in Chinese, there's a saying that, if there's a slit in the ground, I would burrow myself into it to hide myself. That's how I felt. I felt so ashamed. I was looking for a place to hide because I feel so guilty as a Chinese to the birds that I would hunt to extinction.
It's so interesting that it's like the little things along the way, things that, I mean, how many times have we all, in the United States or other countries, looked up, we've seen the moon, see birds. I mean, all these things are very common, and yet they are pivotal points for you. We've got to take a really quick break, and then we'll come right back. But we're here with Dr. Chen. We're discussing his journey, I guess, really. The trip itself, I think, was probably an airplane flight, but the journey of coming to America and being here. And we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't.
Okay, there we go. All right, so I think the thing with the birds is something that was it discussed much in your country? How did you even know?
I read it through a magazine called China. It's an electronic magazine, China News Digest. It's another organization that has a big impact among Chinese students in the United States. That's also started by a group of Chinese students, connected with the 1989 student movement. The 1989 student movement has played a important, probably the most important role for that generation of Chinese students in the United States. But it has not been studied enough. I want to go back to, my little story is really a small story amongst a large chain in China. I myself, because my study, because I was chosen as a role model for the Chinese authority to write education, and how I graduated ahead of schedule, how I, came to the United States. So that part of the story became a inspirational story for other young kids. So they were written into textbook. They're written into, like inspiration material for the young kids to learn. But that was before my activism is known to the Chinese government. And my part in the student movement is small enough that, even though I got to the blacklist of the Chinese government, it has little impact in the society. But then later, when I founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group, when I brought this human rights violation cases to the international stage, the impact is much bigger. And my name gets onto the internet, and the authority, the Chinese government, went to the extreme to retrieve those textbooks, to retrieve basically to eliminate, try to wipe out my story. And now my story used to be all over the place. Now in China, you won't be able to find it.
Oh, no kidding. You've been erased.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder they enjoyed the show so much last week.
And
that's making more sense now.
I haven't forgot about that. I was going to make a comment that Bill, as soon as you're going to get to the bad side of the the Chinese regime, you start to live dangerously. And I'm not joking.
No, we did. We actually did a show a few months, like 2 months ago, maybe. I don't remember if it was with June or so. Oh, no, it was with Mary Todd. It was about her son, Shane Todd, who was, he magically committed suicide when he decided to leave China.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah.
I know the story.
And as soon as we aired that show, suddenly all sorts of interesting things started happening online.
Yeah. So one fact that not many people know, that there's this thing called stability maintenance organization or mechanism in China.
Oh.
So this is a government machinery under the so-called political legal commission. It's a party function, the Chinese Communist Party function. It consumes the largest government spending, outspending our national defense, our military. What does that tell you?
Wow.
That tells you that the government view its people more threatening than any foreign army, foreign invasion. The so-called stability maintenance is completely targeted internally. that the uprisings internal from the people. So when a government only view its own people as a greater danger than foreign nation, they will have to spend more money on that. That tells you how counterproductive that regime is, how much resources wasted against its own citizens. And the hacking or silencing of any foreign voices, influences, goes under that that spending, the maintain the stability maintenance expenditure. And so congratulations to you. You now just get onto their list.
We just met
the team.
What are they called? The Department of Stability?
No, it's called the Stability Maintenance Mechanism.
That's catchy. No wonder I couldn't remember it.
Yeah, Stability Maintenance Mechanism.
Wow. So all they do is go around and make sure that nobody says anything bad.
Right. Right.
Is that where the social scores and all those kinds of things, is that fit kind of in their purview?
The social score, the facial recognition, all the so-called interception of petitioners, all goes under it. In Hong Kong is a hot topic now. What's going on in Hong Kong goes under it as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. But this so-called maintenance mechanism, or stability maintenance, is a self-expanding mechanism. Why it sucks so much resources into it? It's because to maintain its expansion, it creates instability. So there would be a need for the stability maintenance. Right?
You have a whole group of people that are out there like fake causing trouble so that they can have more people to silence them.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And that's what's going on in
Perfect.
Hong Kong. That's what's going on in Hong Kong. Many of the so-called the protests, those of, flame, strong bomb throwing, those are not the peaceful petitioners or protesters. Those are actually government agents.
Oh.
They're of trouble.
Yeah.
So
we stink at this. We didn't see that right off. we're apparently not very good at this. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yes, because, it's very difficult for people outside of China or people who haven't lived under that system to understand the twisted way of how that regime thinks.
Yeah, it's like common sense in reverse.
Right, right.
Wow.
And they would just, you put it beautifully. So the government would stir up more trouble, so it would have more need to stamp out the trouble.
Perfect. Wow. It takes quite a mechanism to actually think that up and make that okay. I mean, everybody has to basically agree to that. So it isn't like a tiny group in your government. That if that's the largest department and that's their standard operating procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And this is a newer mechanism. This is not traditional. That is not even old communism. Soviet didn't have that. The East Bloc didn't have that. And this is a newer invention of the modern day communism. It really came about after 1992. When this is not well studied, not publicized.
I can imagine why. I mean, obviously, if as a country, you wouldn't exactly want everybody to know this, because then, I mean, now you watch, we'll watch all the protests, the footage on protests, and be like, oh, look at that guy right there. I wonder what he's doing, if he's part of it. Shoot, we have to take a really quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Chen, and we are chatting about China and, you know, how we got ourselves on the naughty list. So early, too. It's not even Christmas. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Probably even see the moon if you wait a few hours. So, you know, on that particular topic there, when you said you had never really seen the moon clear like that before, could you see stars? I mean, had you seen stars before?
Yeah, in countryside. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if you get out of town a ways, but isn't being sent to the countryside a bad thing there? You can go to the countryside, but you don't want to be sent there. Somebody was telling us their relatives got sent to the countryside, which was like,
Yeah, the life in China. There were actually a period of time that that youngsters were sent to the countryside. I was actually almost, if the culture. Didn't end, I would be sent to countryside myself.
Which is basically kind of like Siberia. I mean, you're incarcerated. You're not actually, you know, picnicking, right?
Yeah. And the world didn't know the real reason for it is because they not provide job for a younger generation. So they exile them to the countryside.
Oh, well, of course. If you have too many workers, you just... Get rid of them.
Well,
what a nuisance.
They're facing that problem now.
Yikes.
So, we were talking about that. You really have to take a twist of mind to understand the regime. So, I found a way to explain it. Let me ask you a question. Maybe a twisting question. So, do you think it's easier to govern animals, or it's easier to govern human beings?
I'm kind of a problem child. I'm thinking, well, are they big animals? Are they small? Are we talking puppies? Are we looking at giraffes? No, I mean,
yeah.
I
doesn't matter. Even the worst animals is the most fierce animal. You know, tiger.
Totally,
lion,
people.
Like,
because yeah, people are always trying to figure out how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. So you would think, you know, we human, you know, are easier to reason with, to govern them would be easier. Actually, animals are easier to govern.
You can kind of scare them and they stay scared.
Yeah. I mean, look, how many, you can herd a large group of animals, right?
Look at sheep.
Millions of them.
Or sheep.
Just a few people is enough to herd a large herd. That's exactly what the Chinese regime are trying to do. They govern by dehumanizing humans. And unfortunately, and they're not going to like what I'm saying, I see The socialism movement is going towards that direction.
Yeah.
Dehumanizing human. Right? What's the difference between human and animal? That we have a conscience. And the best way to dehumanize human is to remove their conscience. And the best way, one of the best ways to eliminate conscience, to just make our dreams die, is to give you a lofty ideal and then show you that ideal is just a phony. To burst that big bubble, that's the best way to destroy it. And that's what the communism has done. That it the communism claim it's the highest ideal is the utopia.
Right. Everybody is taken care of. Nobody struggles. You don't have any homeless.
Right.
Everything is fair. I mean, anybody who's been through second grade knows that's a lie.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound familiar?
Yes.
Medicare for everyone?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's just a baby step. Baby step.
Oh, don't forget
that.
The climate. Don't forget climate control. It's just like having a giant thermostat on the earth. We just swivel the dial and, you know.
Yeah.
We'll be able to control that. You won't have any more wind or any more of those dopey rainstorms that cause all these problems or, you know, a lot of bad snow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to fix all of it.
So the regime, the party, the CCP give you that, you know, lofty idealism. And then they act to destroy it in front of you. They roll in a tank to destroy everything. And that burst your... the young generation, the whole nation's idealistic bubble. And that's the best way to kill dreams.
Sure.
And it tells you everything is false.
It's also a really good way, although I'm sure the percentage of people that fall into this category are somewhat smaller, but it's a terrific way to create opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, you have a whole bunch of them wringing their hands. You have this other group that's out there sharpening sticks. Like, all right, fix you.
Mm-hmm.
So just since you've already been through this with professionals, the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, all these people that are, you know, rolling out this socialist pipe dream. I mean, I think they stink at it, but, I mean, do you think they have any skills there? Are they good at this? Are they good at selling it, you think, based on maybe what you've seen?
It's not that they're good at selling it. It is more about the people of this country.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Well, the combination of the people in this country not having been exposed to what the reality would be, but it also has a lot to do with media. I remember we discussed in our previous year that media cannot be treated as regular business, because any business or any entity that carries public trust has a moral responsibility because it carries the public trust. Media now treats their news or their reporting as product. But news and news reporting, these are not products. You know, iPhone is a product. Car is a product. We can decide what product we manufacture, what we make, what we sell. But news media, if we select what we can sell, it's very easy to manipulate the public. Right, and now we see they're more reporting how Google, how they can, you know, twist their search engine, and we would get bias results, and that is a breach of public trust. It's very, very serious, and unfortunately, the public. Well, we start to, you know, the public started picking up on that. But the severity of this crime has not been properly addressed. News News media cannot be treated as regular business. They should not be able to decide their product. Once they decide, you know, this product is not good for us, from us making money, then they have manipulated the public trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a part to do with, even though I don't think they're good at it, but they get it going. It doesn't matter, you know, whether...
That's true. I guess you don't have to have great skill if you can get the ball rolling and you can get the media to sell it for you in the background.
Exactly. That's the problem, okay? And so, let me give you an example of that, okay? How that would be manipulated. I just share with my own experience how I was patriotic, okay? The nationalism, the patriotism in China has been manipulated to the extreme. But that patriotism in China is not patriotic. Patriotism is a love. In China, it's not a love. It's actually, I call it hatredism.
Hatredism.
Yeah, because it's not about love. It's about hate. You know,
they don't love the country. They just hate everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we were
kind
taught.
Of an interesting way
we
to
were
that
told.
Happen.
Yeah, yeah, and we don't see the damage of it. Okay. Now, this relates to what's going on in the United States.
Yeah.
Okay? Love is supposed to be even, right? Love should not be a sentiment. At the expense of some people. Love should be universal, right? Yet, the socialism, you know, what you're doing now, they are using love for a certain group.
Sure, we can love you, but then, you know what, because of that, we got to hate you.
Yeah.
How unfortunate for you. We've got to take a quick break, oddly enough, for the news. little news break. And we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Chen. And you can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.